The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. Join him as he and his guests discover how businesses thrive in California.
Well, welcome to The Pilgrim on the 405. We're going to have a great conversation today with a good friend of mine, Mike Abercrombie. And Mike Abercrombie is going to tell us a lot about what he has been doing, what he's doing now, and what it's going to look like in the future. So, Mike, welcome to The Pilgrim on the 405.
Thank you. Great to be here.
So we were talking before the show started. Tell us a little bit about this New York and Sony and all of this stuff that you were doing.
It was my flashback seeing all this equipment. Yeah, so my entrepreneurial background is for the last 20-plus years, I've been a small business owner here in California doing software development training. But I was actually working for a large corporation before that. I spent 10 years at Sony. And in my last engagement there, I was in New York City. Odd for an Angeleno native, but loved that side of the country. Check that out. Was managing the studios for Sony Classical, the company which was called Developmentor, with five guys that were in the PhD program in computer science here at UCI. And we saw an opportunity in the corporate market to do really hardcore technical training that wasn't really available at the time. This was circa 1993, and brought those guys together and just had a really good run out of it.
Well, you know, interesting, in 1993, I was writing user's guides for Toshiba.
Oh, sure.
And I did that for 5 years mm-hmm. and then created some products of my own. That's part of my background. But now tell me, you were training software developers to develop.
Correct.
What are some of the things that were produced?
Well, if you think about the evolution of technology, it's changing very rapidly. So, but there's programming languages that are involved. There's different operating systems and platforms. There's different APIs and so on. And as those things are changing, the workforce has to get reskilled each time. So customers for us, we were a small entrepreneurial company, but we were serving large corporate enterprises. So banks, financial services, technology companies here like Qualcomm and Microsoft and HP, they all have a large cadre of developers that have to keep up and then get reskilled as the projects change and implement new technologies. And that's what we would teach classes on. And it was all classroom-based, hands-on training was how we did the work.
It's amazing. I thought that once someone became a developer, learned the language, it's like, you know, it's like going through, jumping into the pool. I mean, you're there. But what I'm hearing is you've got to be continually upgrading your skills.
Oh, it's changing so fast. You have to continually be upgrading. But for your listeners, if there's any younger ones, there was a very clear pattern. Those that took the time to get a CS degree, computer science degree from a university, to understand the underbelly of how this stuff actually really works, they could adapt very fast, very easily, in perpetuity. The others struggle a little bit.
So now you have moved from that to a new venture.
I did,
so
yeah.
So tell me about it.
So in 2015, I sold that business to another large corporation that was a large IT training company. And as I was in the last years of that company, I was introduced to EOS, which I know you're familiar with as well, which stands for the Entrepreneurial Operating System. And when I saw that and I saw this framework for managing an entrepreneurial business, I kind of had a aha moment. Aha number one was I saw every mistake I made as a business leader in living color because I didn't have the tools to solve some of the issues that I had. The second one is on my journey in corporate training, I had sort of a side thing that had occurred where I started working with CEO and executives group, teaching them communication skills and small group, peer group exchange and things like that. And that was really, really rewarding work. But not only EOS was a very powerful framework for managing the business, which resonated with me, but I've long wanted to do more with executive groups and entrepreneurial teams. And when I realized that businesses are using implementers to come in, work with their teams to implement the system, it was very clear for me instantly that once I completed my business time with my business and I was fully exited, that that's where I wanted to put my attention.
So tell me, when you said every mistake, what were some of the mistakes that you made?
Oh, my gosh. Several of them. I mean, certainly around, I would say the two big ones that jumped off the page was one, people were constantly hiring. For those of you listening, it sounds like we have a fire drill going in the building here. But, you know, people was a big one. You can't get your vision achieved. You can't make your business successful without the right people. And you actually need to be fairly systematic about it. I found historically I made too much of those decisions on emotion and gut and referral and didn't really have an objective way to assess them, retain them, and so on. And so when I saw the tools for that, it was like, wow, I was doing it ad hoc. I was doing it by rote. I wasn't systematic about it. And that would have created so much, it just would have been a much better environment for me. So the people was one. And it was not uncommon. We did it regularly where we would meet with the management team and do an offsite and create a plan and have a strategy to go at things. But my experience was reality always had a different plan. And so as soon as reality kicked in and something was missed or there was a new challenge or circumstances changed, we weren't systematic at bringing that back to our plan, squaring it with what to do next. So there was ways in that EOS framework that I saw that, wow, I wasn't doing that. And that made it more challenged to execute.
So back to talking about people.
Mm-hmm.
I often hear people say I made a mistake.
Sure.
And maybe one time I make a mistake, but when that becomes a series of mistakes, they're not really mistakes anymore. I mean, we're really picking the people that we have a system, whether it's a conscious system or not, but whatever
right.
we're doing to bring those on, that's not a mistake. It's just an ineffective way of trying to get to where we want to get to, and we're not getting there.
You're not getting there.
And so I think that's really important. It seems to me that this whole notion of mistake, we're afraid to make a mistake, but the reality is we really learn, or we have the opportunity to learn from the mistakes we make.
Oh, absolutely. If you learn, if you take that lesson, if you quantify what went wrong, what could be better, and you fold that back in, you improve your processes, you improve your system, and you spread those lessons throughout the organization so the mistakes don't become institutionalized, but rather the wisdom becomes institutionalized, then they absolutely serve you. But you got to be systematic about doing
that. Well, I think that systematic piece is very important because what I've observed is when people, I mean, I think the research shows us that 82% of the problems we have in business is related to people.
Yes,
right.
I would agree.
So when people, someone hires someone and they don't work out, then one of the things that they can do, which is not very helpful, is to assume that they made a small mistake someplace.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is, if they don't have an effective system that works every time, then going back and trying to fix that one problem next time is not going to get us where we want to go.
No, that's right. And I think one of the things that I saw, particularly when I was introduced to EOS, was removing the emotions and getting more objective about it. People are the most important part, but we're emotional beings. We have a visceral response when we meet people that we like or we dislike. We interact with them. We have reactions to that. And the emotions that we go through really influence those day-to-day reactions from that first introduction at the interview to on the job, interaction with the team, and ultimately to replacement or termination, wherever that journey leads. But if you can have an objective system that strips that out so that you can look at it along with other people on your team that says, is this person on one level the right skill? They can actually perform the job. Do they have the natural ability to meet and perform the tasks that the business needs, coupled with things like softer things like core values? Does this person actually share the core values that really represent the kind of organization we're trying to build here? Do we want to be with this person? Do they fit in? Can their contributions help us endure this culture we're creating? And in the EOS world, as you know, we refer to that as right people and right seats, and you've really got to have both. And when you have a way of doing that, you can actually make a meaningful assessment on both of those, and then it's much more objective, and it's just so much easier than the shoot from the hip and the gut and letting your emotions sort of drive things.
Well, I think one of the pieces is that the one person in that interview who really has a vested interest in this is the candidate.
Oh, absolutely.
And the candidate has his own system, his own techniques, his own patterns for getting the job. And when that becomes the most important thing for that candidate to get the job, then as those emotional trigger points become evident to the candidate, then start playing on those, whether it's you know, I really like to take people who are new and grow them. Well, then I'll show you how I can be grown and I can be nurtured. I need help. But it's that kind of interaction that I think leads us in the wrong direction.
Mm.
Because not every candidate, even though they can get the job, is the right person. And they might not even be able to be in the right seat.
That's correct. And they also have an emotional response to it. And they may also have an underlying need that we don't see in terms of just how important it is to get this job for security or income. So they may be in conflict with themselves. They'll take it to get the job.
Yeah, absolutely. Right?
Which ultimately will stack the deck against them being successful. So interestingly, I have a longtime friend who's going through a job change right now. And I was encouraging him, and we were reviewing, you know, a personality profile type that says, listen, these are your traits. These are the things that are true in the environment that you naturally succeed in based on your type, your work experience, and the way you like to interact with other people. Use that as a guide to look for organizations that mesh with how your natural mode of operating is. So just like as a business owner, we want to fit with core values and skill sets for the seat we have in our business. I would encourage candidates to become self-aware about the kinds of organizations they want to work for. And I realize there's a need to get a job to pay your mortgage and so on. But to the degree that you can filter the list of companies to match things that will ensure your success, that's a worthy pursuit. And in the tight labor market we have in California, this is as good a time as any to do that. They have more control than they do at other times. So the fit should go both ways.
Well, I spend 6 weeks at least once a year at the local Salvation Army rehabilitation program with people that are completing the two-year rehabilitation plan, and they are ready to go back into the job market. And when I come in, their thought is that my job is to teach them how to get a job. And what I tell them is lots of jobs you don't want. In fact, most of the jobs out there you don't want. And therefore, helping them, it's amazing what they say when it finally dawns on them. They wake up and realize they get to choose what job they want to apply for. They get to choose what job they want to accept. And they get to tell people, this is what I want, rather than try to pretend that they are anything that the job offerer wants.
Yeah, you know, you just triggered a thought that I think is really important. As employers and business owners, we're constantly thinking of, we need to interview the applicants to find what's right for us. My hope would be for applicants is they would go out on these meetings with a view of, I need to interview these employers. And I don't know that they're doing that, because when I talk to people that are looking for jobs, it's like, well, I'm going to interview this and hope I get this job.
I hope I get it.
It's reactionary. It's like, no, I'm going to go interview some companies to see if this is where I want to work. And I think that would be a healthy mindset for them to adopt.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, especially with these people coming out of this, you know, a drug rehab or alcohol program, they're very vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It doesn't take a whole lot to make them feel good and accepted, and they wind up doing this slave labor job that doesn't do anybody any good. So getting the right people in the right seats and getting really clear on what culture do we want to have around here? What is it that we actually have? Now, let's talk a little bit about how you do that with EOS.
Yeah, sure. So with EOS, we have an actual process for helping define what the core values are. And core values, you know, you've seen them many times. They're at the front of every management book, and they're a little bit overused. But in fact, they are huge drivers on creating the culture that you want. And too often, I think people try and wordsmith them. So they will wordsmith them into things that they think their customers or partners are expecting them to say, well, we need to be honest and we need to have integrity. And it's like all these things, and there's a lot of energy spent on that. That doesn't really do anything. First of all, who doesn't want to do business with a company that isn't honest? I mean, you know, so some of those things you can just throw away. But the real core values are the behaviors that are exhibited by the best people in their organization. Those are the people that they would clone, that if they had more of them, the business would absolutely take off. So the process of getting to the right core values in the organization is to discover what those are. And there's some exercises that we do through identifying these high performers in the organization that really embody what's best about that organization, and then crystallizing that, pulling that together into a list, because those are the ones. And the right ones are different in every single organization. There is no set of core values that is the same across any organization. But once you do that, then the process that we go through is we'll actually sort of acid test it. We'll put the leadership team up against them and see, do these guys walk the talk? And we'll take some high performers and low performers and see, are they walking it? And we create kind of an objective way to confirm that, yes, these are the behaviors, these are the core values and the traits that really make this organization great. And when the leadership team has really validated that and we're right, that's when the gun goes off to enduring it, protecting it, and systematically building it. So it's good to get it. First step is to get it. But after that, once you're clear, the leadership team has to support that. They support it in the hiring process, not letting people in the organization that don't share those. They support it in the review, recognition, and ultimately maybe in the firing process if they have people that aren't supporting that and don't share those core values. But it's a big driver in building the organization.
Well, one of the things that I find in my U.S. practice is when the leadership finally dawns on them that they can create the culture that they want, and that it's not just a matter of having to put up with, but that they're actually in charge of creating, sustaining, and extending that culture throughout the company.
That's right. Yeah. And when the culture is aligned, everybody wants to work there. The energy is pervasive. It shows up in the interviews that they're doing with applicants. It shows up in the interviews with culture. And in the tight labor market where you're trying to recruit, you know, once you become known for, or people that meet people in your organization realize that's a place people really like to work, it just puts gravity in your favor in terms of recruiting and retaining applicants.
Well, it was very interesting when Aaron Beale introduced me to EOS. The way he introduced it to me was, this is you, Will.
Oh, interesting.
This is you. All the things that we wanted you to do when you were training us with sales and sales management, and we wanted you to come in and help the rest of the company, and you couldn't do it.
Mm.
This is you. And so that really helped me to get clear on what it is that I want to be doing and how I want to be helping businesses thrive in California.
Sure.
And that's what this radio show is about. So it really does begin with a clarity about who we are and what we stand for, which is another way of talking about core values, right?
That's right. That's right.
So then we have right people, right seats. And then you talked about the plan and how reality hits. And when reality hits and we start reacting, how is it that, how do you see businesses getting back on track?
Well, in the EOS world, we have a component of the business that we just refer to as issues. And this is where I was really missing a key tool in my business because, as I said, reality has a different plan. Every single business day, people in the business, not just the leaders, but they run into things. They observe things. There's a gotcha. There's a barrier. Oh, that didn't work as planned. All of these things come along the way. Customer complains about something. And there's no institutional way of incorporating those, as we talked about earlier. How do we learn from that mistake and institutionalize that? And in the hurried pace of today's world, when you're just trying to keep up and get your to-do list done for the day, you don't have time to stop and fix that problem because you committed to ship something or to complete that proposal or whatever it is. So what happens is the people push the things that they observe over to the side and they don't get dealt with.
So we call that denial.
That denial would be one way, but they pile up and the organization doesn't continually to improve at the pace that it should. So in EOS, we have two simple disciplines for doing that. The first thing is in creating this open, honest culture, we really encourage everybody, not just the leaders, but top and bottom, to call those issues out, put them up on the table. We have a thing called the issues list, and different companies implement their issues list any different ways, but that's just note-taking. If you see an issue, it goes on the issues list. And this is a discipline that goes throughout the organization, because once we have them identified and we don't move them away, then we can actually do something with them. And in the meeting cadence that we use in EOS, we devote the primary portion of time to actually solving those issues. We have a business plan. We have goals and objectives. We need to just check in on that. That part's fairly brief. And if we're not on track, well, that in itself becomes an issue because we've got to do what we need to do to bring it back on track. But when we sit down as a team to solve the business's issues, we need to look at that list and then we prioritize it. There's a long list, and it's always tempting to take the one off the top, or, well, we can knock that out in 5 minutes. Let's get that out of the way. No, let's go after what's most important in the business. Let's unpack that, and let's identify the root issue. We do that. Then we have a discussion that includes all the input around the table, and from there we move to a solution. When that one's done, we do the next one. But this process repeats, and we keep the team focused on cataloging the issues in the issues list and then having a systematic way to actually solve them, work through them, and then the solutions are put out as actions and changes and whatever processes.
And what I see happening is when we don't have a place to put those issues on the table, and this is not a suggestion box. This is actually dealing with the issues face to face. When we don't have that, then we either get into denial, we can't fix it, it's just part of being in business, or into projection. It's their fault. They did something wrong. And that continue, and that begins to accumulate, and now we have a big division in the company.
Yeah, both of those happen, but there's even, in my experience, a bigger one than that. And that is that I'll just deal with it. So what happens is there's a problem. I'm out with a client site. We've botched up a proposal. I don't know what it is, or there's a product. Me and my colleague, we can just put the duct tape on the thing and get it out the door. Uh-huh. So we deal with it because we're committed to the customer or our deadlines or whatever. And in dealing with it, that takes care of it in the short term. But we then don't bring that back because I'm so happy to be done with it. I got to get on to the next thing. That lesson is institutionalized. So in doing it with a disciplined issues list like we do in EOS, yes, you're going to jump on it. Yes, you're going to put that fire out. But then you're going to put that what just occurred on the issues list so we can come back and solve it once and for all so it's permanent in the business.
Right. Well, all right. Well, we're going to take a short break here, Mike, and we come back. Then I want to talk about how businesses can actually take advantage of the insights that EOS brings them. All right. We'll be right back after we hear a word from our sponsors.
It's time for another tip from Sandler Training. Traditional sales training teaches techniques on how to eliminate stalls and objections. Some are fancy sales moves, while others are programmed responses. Sales is a conversation, and I don't know how you can memorize every possible response for every sales situation. Also, the prospect has usually heard these responses before and has been turned off by some fancy sales move. When you really think about it, the only person qualified to address the stall or objection is the prospect. Ask the right questions and you will eliminate stalls and objections. And that's another tip from Sandler Training, finding power through reinforcement.
Well, welcome back to the Pilgrim on the 405. We've been talking with Mike Abercrombie and exploring the problems that businesses have that get in the way and keep them from thriving in California, and probably not just California, but any businesses. And what we've been talking about is ways of getting clear about the culture, getting clear about the values, getting the right people into the organization, and making sure that they're in the right seat where they They get it. They want it. They're capable of doing it. And they can do the things that that particular job requires of them to do. And then we talked about how to have a way of coming back to our plan. Once we have a plan for how we're going to move when reality steps in with all the issues that are there, how do we go about doing that? Now, what I want to do is explore how a company who might be feeling some of these issues here, if they were to talk with you or me or any of the other 190 implementers around the country, what would that mean to them? How do they go about dealing with some of these issues with using EOS?
Issues processing in general, or whether or not EOS is a good fit for their business?
Well, either one. Why don't we start off with finding out whether it's going to help me?
Yeah, so I think in terms of EOS as a framework for running your entrepreneurial company, that's a decision. First of all, I would encourage every business to do it. We have over 4,500 companies now that are running on it with the support of implementers, and the results are speaking for themselves. It continues to go up. But so I would make a general encouragement to explore it. But if you explore it and it is of interest, the best thing you can do is share that with your whole leadership team. Because when EOS works really well, it's because the teams understand the value of having that framework, and they have to be all in. Where a framework like EOS will struggle is in a lifestyle business with an owner who really isn't that focused on growth or execution. It's throwing off enough cash. They're comfortable. Comfort isn't a good thing, right? So if you can share it with the leadership team, and the leadership team can look eyeball to eyeball and see the value of it and say, this is a good way for us to operate the business. We see how we can engage with the process. We can see how the results are going to be derived from this and how it's going to improve our coordination and execution. Once a leadership team is all in that this is a good way to run, then you've got something that sticks and lasts for years.
All right. So let's suppose that the group says, we want to do it. How do they begin to incorporate this? How do you find, we know about the process, maybe we can share that with people, what the process is, but then I want to talk about how a company begins to make good use of that process.
So it becomes not something they add to their business, but it becomes a way that they run their business. And with entrepreneurial teams that are using EOS, we have a specific way of rolling it into the organization. Again, only after the leadership team is all in on that this is a good way to run it. And we take a slightly different approach. EOS is holistic in the sense that it's covering all aspects of the business. It's covering not only the vision, the people, the issues like we talked about, but it also covers data. Can we be objective about the performance of the business? It covers process so we can scale and create consistency in the business. And as I mentioned earlier, the discipline and the accountability to execute are what we call traction. So it's all manner of the business, which is another thing that I think distinguishes it. So instead of what a lot of other things will do, like if you read a management book, I had lots of books on strategic planning, and I would have a consultant that we'd do a great offsite, or there's a book on culture. All of these are piecemeal segments that are important, and EOS will pull the whole thing together. But the way we do it with companies is we don't start with the vision. And that's one of the most surprising things when companies look at it. We set that aside first, because if you do a beautiful offsite and come up with a grand plan and you bring it back to a leadership team that has some dysfunction, isn't clear on the roles and responsibilities, and isn't executing really well, that vision will have a lower probability of success. So by contrast, once the team says we want to go forward with EOS, we spend our time getting the execution really well. We work on how they're structured, clarifying their roles and responsibilities so that it's set up to execute the way they need to. And then we set our short-term priorities. We get them into a meeting cadence, which pulls it all together and improves their communication. We set up that data component for the scorecard, and we let them work with that for a few weeks. And over the next few weeks, they really start to refine how they work together. That is like the analogy I use is a conveyor belt. We get the conveyor belt moving, and they get comfortable with that. And once that pace picks up, then we lay in the vision part. What are those core values that we talked about? What's the focus of the business? What's our go-to-market strategy and our three-year picture and one-year plan? We start bringing all those down, but bringing those down into a team that's executing really well and is disciplined and working well together, now we have the tools to get that vision fulfilled.
Yeah, in the many years that I've worked with companies, very often there's a book that they're reading. And the book has these great ideas. And so we're going to implement these great ideas. And very often it comes from the visionary who's picked it up and says, this is where we're going to go. But they're really, those books really don't have an execution plan, do they?
No, they don't. And for your listeners that may not be familiar with EOS, you said the book often comes from the visionary. A visionary is somebody in EOS that we refer to as, they're usually the creative spark. They're often the founder. They're the ones that are generating ideas. And so one idea might be, hey, my buddy told me about this book, and this book comes in. And these books are great. There's so many ideas. Some of them can be complicated. Some of them can be isolated because they don't connect to other things. I mean, I think, yes, and I did them. I have a whole shelf of them.
Yes,
I have several
indeed.
Shelves of them.
Yes.
And I brought them in and I tried them. But where I struggled was the book on strategic plan didn't tie to the book on culture building or the book on execution. There was no way for it to hang together. And each of them were 300 pages, right? So what I liked about EOS and what really drew me to it was that the tools are simple. There's no rocket science. This is dead simple stuff, but time-tested. But it's holistic in the sense that it pulls it together. So, yes, we have to create a strategic plan. We have to know where we're going, and we have to create that culture. But if you don't connect that up to the people in a discrete way that's linked, it connected up to your core processes and how the business runs, then connected up to the discipline and the data on how it's using and the issues, you don't get the results. So rather than read all these books and attempt to cobble them together, you can just focus on EOS, and it's really simple.
Well, isn't that what Geno Wickman, the founder, did? I mean, he literally cobbled together all of these pieces. And what I understand is he went and studied with Patrick Lencioni, with Dan Sullivan. He went to all of these experts in their narrow field and began to pull them together, number one, to have a holistic picture, and then to put together a way over a couple of years for a company to actually live into this.
Yeah, I like to think of it, Gina saved me a lot of time reading.
Yes, yes, yes.
You know, and another analogy that I use when I try and describe the work that he's done, you know, Tony Robbins, motivational speaker, you know, the net sum, my impression of his work, having seen him, is that he read every book known to man in the form of human psychology and distilled it down and made it accessible. And that helps us. That's why his performance improvement programs and whatnot are so popular, because it just nets it all out for us. But if you look in the world of business, that's Geno. Geno has read every management book known to mankind, took the lessons from Jim Collins and Patrick Lencioni, all these people, and managed to distill it down into a simple framework that's accessible for an entrepreneur and a business owner. And why that's important is, people start their businesses because they see an opportunity or their passion or they have a talent around a product, and they're entrepreneurs first. They know how to do their widgets or produce their products or services, and that's what gets them up every day. And all the things you got to do to run a business when the business starts to take off is like a whole thing you're not ready for, you're not educated for. So rather than have to run up and down the halls of the bookstores and read all these things and go to training classes and do all this stuff, here's a framework. Gives you everything, soup to nuts, that you're going to need. Follow the steps. Incorporate your leadership. It just distills it down and makes it easy. You did a great job with that.
Well, and I mean, I wanted to mention one thing about an experience that I had. I introduced a company, was invited in to introduce a company to their leadership team, to EOS. And at the end, the owner said, this is really good. No, we appreciate this. But I'm going to send my people to Tony Robbins.
Interesting.
Right? And, sure. and I thought to myself, okay, you're going to send them to Tony Robbins, and that's a good thing. I mean, I really appreciate that you are willing to spend money from the company to help develop your people, to help them to become more motivated. And I said, and then I thought to myself, there will come a time when you have a lot of motivated people who are going in a lot of different directions.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Keep my card.
Exactly. Well, you know, we talked at the top of the interview about the applicant interviewing the business, right? Mm-hmm. So if you do come back from one of Tony's sessions, you should be more self-aware about what G's you up, what works for you, and what you're passionate about. And it's that kind of awareness that'll make you a better interviewer of the organization. Right. So that's where they're going to connect. But once we get inside the business, we always have to focus on the greater good of the business. And all of the individual motivations that the people in the organization possess have to supersede to the greater good of what the business has to have.
Or find another business.
Absolutely. Right.
Because it's not subordinate my wishes, my desires to the greater good of the business. It's keep focused on in this place, we're working on the business. Now, if I've got some other things that I want to be doing other than this, then I need to go do it.
Yeah, and we should just honor that and recognize that good for you. We want to support you. This may not be the place to do it. Nothing wrong with that at all.
We were talking about having all of this packaged together. This is not a package together that a visionary or even that integrator will read and then now it's all magic. It really does involve, first of all, the leadership team all buying in, understanding, living this out. And then, which I find just astounding, rolling it out to the rest of the company where everybody in the company from the guy who sweeps the floor, empties the trash, all the way up to the CEO is all involved in this process.
Yeah, there's a few underlying disciplines that are true in every business, and we start with getting the leadership team clear on those. And that's things like, you know, are you crystal clear on your roles and responsibilities and what the guy next to you, his roles and responsibilities? Are you clear on what your focus is for the next 90 days and where this business is heading? And do you have the tools to solve the issues that we were talking about earlier once and for all? And are we objective about how we're performing? And that's the data component and scorecard component. But those disciplines are applicable not only at the leadership team level, but departments have their own data. They have their own, priorities for the quarter, and you move on down through the thing. So these, again, it's a set of very simple disciplines that once the leadership team is using them consistently and they really understand them and they prove them out, you start moving them down to the other parts of the organization, and the same focus and execution really permeates the whole organization ultimately.
What I find, there's definitely the value to defining what is my responsibility. At the same time, what I find in many companies is not only do I not know what I'm supposed to do, I don't know what I'm not supposed to do. Very often in entrepreneurial companies that are having a lot of growth, we hear, oh, I have to wear many hats. I have to do all of these things. And the last session day I was doing with a company, we talked about, you know, what happens when this person, it's 5 o'clock, it's time to go home, but the trash cans haven't been emptied. What do I do? And we ask them to talk about that and to think through that. I mean, what happens if every day at 5 o'clock the trash cans are not empty and I'm always emptying them? Eventually, I'm going to begin to resent that.
Yeah, we call that an issue, by the way.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is what they learned is, yes, I can empty the trash can today, but that becomes an issue that we have to get on the table rather than allow me to just resent it and begin to project out that, you know, somebody's doing something wrong because it's not getting emptied.
Yeah, that's right. So the trash can's one small grenade, but you throw yourself on it a few times, that's not any fun. So we got to systematically figure out how to do it. Yeah.
Right.
That's exactly right. So that's just putting it on the issue. It's a good metaphor for, you know, obviously this happens at much greater scale than the trash can, but let's bring that issue. I've had to do it 3 times, and the fact that we don't have a way of doing it, that's a core issue we have to solve. The other thing that's interesting, you mentioned, getting clear on what you need to do and what you're not supposed to do. The way the organization is structured is documented in such a way that you know what the other people are doing. And that's often missing in fast-growing entrepreneurial companies, is I'm so focused on getting my stuff done, I don't know what the left hand is doing if I'm the right hand. So we want to do it in a way where everybody knows what everybody else is doing. That really helps communication. It gives us one set of eyeballs to look in when there's an issue. Just makes things much more efficient.
We talk about keeping the circles connected, right?
Yeah, keeping the circles connected. And I think, you know, a concept that's underlying that you and I are familiar with working with EOS that your listeners may not be familiar with, that I find very profound when I'm working with teams, entrepreneurial teams grow around a founder. They bring in, you know, sometimes they start with family members or just somebody they know from their last business. And this thing starts to take off as they build a team. And the result of that is that they organize and they structure the business around these people. Well, Joe can do these things and Will can do these things and Mike can do these things. And you start clumping it together. But they haven't stepped back and said, well, if we're this business at this size and this scale with these goals, how should we structure this so that we have organizational clarity and it's as simple as possible and we're efficient to execute on what our goals are, and we do the structure work before we put the people in. And that's the only way to confirm, like you were mentioning earlier, right people, right seats. That's the only way to assess if they're in the right seat is if we leave them out and design the seat for how the business needs to perform. So in EOS, we do a structure first, people second. And for entrepreneurial companies, particularly if they've been running for a while on a group that they've built up, this is like you just ran the bull right through the china shop. They've never stop to do it this way. But it's very clarifying because it forces them to think about how the organization is set up and how those operations and that structure squares with what they're trying to get done, squares with the focus of the business, the customers, and so on.
Well, and it also begins to look at all the processes that go about helping us get to the place where we have the vision, mm-hmm. right, where we want to go. And as we do that, then every individual person becomes equally important.
Correct.
And that is such a dramatic change when we begin to understand that if that trash can isn't emptied, right? Now, it might seem a trivial thing, but that may lead to enough resentment for an important person to finally say, I'm out of here.
That's correct.
Which
yeah.
will have a big impact on the company.
Yeah, your story about the trash cans bringing to mind another one that that Mike Payton talks about. You may know this, but at the end of the day, what a framework like EOS is supposed to do for any entrepreneurial company is get everybody in the organization fully engaged on where they're going and what their part in it is. And I think EOS or not, that's something every entrepreneurial company should have. One of the components in EOS, which I talked about, is what's the focus for the next 90 days? And as you know, we call those rocks based on the Stephen Covey time management thing of putting the big rocks in first. And one of Mike's stories, which just came to my mind as you were talking about the trash can, is one of his clients had a lot of cement trucks. I guess they had 40, 50 cement trucks. And the leader of that organization, as he was showing him EOS, he said to him, well, I got 40 guys driving cement trucks. Why do they need rocks? Like, that's their job. They don't need a rock. It's the same thing every day. And Mike's answer, which I thought was really brilliant, he says, listen, a cement truck driver with a rock, meaning something to focus on in the 90 days, is worth more to you than one without. Now, while it seems simple, it's that hook of that driver out there being fully engaged on what that business needs him focused on in the next 90 days. And that's really getting it engaged at the lowest levels or, you know, throughout the organization. And I found it profound.
And what's going to happen with that rock is that cement truck driver is going to discover he can accomplish that.
Oh, yes.
And all of a sudden, that's my contribution to our vision.
That's correct.
And once I accomplish that, then the next 90 days, I have another one to accomplish. And it's progressive. Because why do people leave? People leave, in my experience, for one of two reasons. It's generally not for more money. They leave because, number one, there is no more challenge, right? I just don't feel challenged. I have all these things that I can do, and nobody's asking me to do it. I don't feel a challenge. Or I don't feel like my supervisor is on my side. He's not helping me achieve what I want. He's not helping me get what I want. And that's what one of the things that EOS does is it fully engages both the supervisor and the person who's being supervised into identifying what's the challenge.
What's the focus?
How can you help us get to where we want to go?
Mm-hmm.
And know that I'm here to help you do that. I'm here to help you be the best you can possibly be.
Yeah, absolutely. You said it well.
Well, so now, what's been your experience? We have a couple minutes more. What's been your experience in California with EOS?
Well, I've got a handful of clients that have been using it, and we're far enough down the road that I'm starting to see the value. What I am struck by is not only the simplicity of the EOS model, but what people need from their business varies wildly. I have a client that is growing very rapidly, doing really high-end custom homes led by a brilliant architect and designer, and his vision and his creativity has created such demand for his products. The company was just struggling to execute, and so it gave him a framework to scale and to get a team around him that could uphold his vision, which then got him out of the trash can problem scenario and is able to focus on his core competency and his unique ability, which is designing homes. So that creates scalability in that business, that framework. But I have another business in a completely unrelated industry that's been thriving here, thriving in California for 50 years. But that generation of leaders recognizes that they don't want to be in the business forever. And they also know that what they did back in the day that made this company successful isn't what might work in the future. So they're using EOS to bring a second generation of leaders in. The framework allows them to collaborate what's important and then sets it up so that the next generation, with the input of the outgoing generation, can maintain it. So it gives them that result. So each business has different challenges. Some it's execution, some it's scaling. In this case, it's succession planning, or maybe it's just profit and revenue growth. But you get clear on the goals, and then the framework will come around to how do we actually achieve those goals.
All right. So if someone wants to talk with you, how would they get in touch with you?
Best place is the web. The website is cworkgrow, just three simple words, all put together in one URL, cworkgrow.com. They'll find my contact information.
S-E-E-G-R-O-W, or S-E-E-W-O-R-K. G-R-O-W.
Good. Your spelling is up to date.
Got there. All right. Super. Telephone number, email address?
Mike at cworkgrow.com. We'll get you there by email. Right. And because I'm in sessions with clients all days, I rarely can pick up the phone. So jump on the web, send me an email. I would love to talk with you.
Well, I know that any business owner who wants to talk more about this will find a great resource in you, Mike.
Thank you.
So we've been really pleased to have Mike Abercrombie, one of the up-and-coming, moving into greatness EOS implementers here in Southern California. So that's been really good. We really enjoyed that. And this is just one other way to help businesses in California thrive.
You've been listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. To hear more of the programs in this podcast, go to www.willcrist.com.